This is Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headley. Marriage equality is an ongoing project for the LGBTQ plus community, yes, but also for interracial couples. Supreme Court justices on the court now have expressed interest in reevaluating whether interracial marriage can be banned. And there are people alive today whose marriages in the mid-20th century were illegal in this country. It's only been 57 years since honoring interracial marriage was made the law of the land. So that sounds like progress. And so does the substantial increase we've seen in interracial marriages and mixed-race kids. But is it really a sign of racial progress?
If you are a white person who is dating a person of color, you should really be an exemplary-ass white person. People of color have a responsibility to themselves to hold the white people that they partner with to a certain standard. And a lot of us have not done that.
Jamila Lemieux of Slate's Care and Feeding joins Hear Me Out in just a moment. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headley. So if you are mixed race like I am, identity is often complicated. Not only do people constantly ask, what are you? But defining your racial background is a longer conversation than it is for most people. You check the other box on a lot of forms and you describe yourself with hyphens. Public opinion on interracial relationships has never been more positive. 94% of Americans support interracial marriage. 20% of Americans are in an interracial marriage. That is a massive increase from where we were in the mid-20th century. But is it a sign of racial progress to have more mixed-race couples and more mixed-race kids? Our guest today says no. Jamila Lemieux is a writer and the co-host of Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting podcast. Hi, Jamila.
Hi.
So, for those who don't know you, tell us what you do.
I'm a writer. I'm a cultural critic. I contribute to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column. I am a mom.
So we're going to be talking about racial identity in here. So I am Black and Jewish. And what is your racial identity?
I am Black. I have a Black parent and a biracial parent.
So tell us your thesis here in as brief as you can, what is your opinion?
Yeah, I'm not of the opinion that an increase in interracial marriages or children is a sign of racial progress, because those individual relationships don't necessarily point to progress in race relations, you know, that white supremacy is being defeated, that people are unpacking their anti-Blackness. You know, it just shows that individual couples have chosen to be together and to procreate.
So, you know, I gotta say that to me, there's a difference between measuring progress systemically and measuring progress in individuals. You know, when my mother, who's obviously Black, married a white dude, she was marrying into a racist Texas family. And, you know, they changed. My grandparents changed over time. Not only did the presence of these adorable little chubby babies very much make them love mixed race kids, but they became really proud of my grandparents on my mother's side. Like, individually, there was real change there. Although, I mean, I guess I would agree with you that that doesn't necessarily lead to systemic change. Do you make that distinction?
I do, you know, and I think it's also worth noting that a lot of families don't change. You know, there are people that go through entire relationships, you know, years long marriages, and their in-laws are just as racist as the day that they met them. You know, the presence of children doesn't soften them. And in fact, some of the people who participate in interracial marriages themselves are racist. You know, I've just heard so many horror stories over the years, particularly from the children of white moms and black dads. You know, about their mother, you know, once their parents have broken up, their mother started calling them the N-word, you know, or otherwise mistreating them on the basis of their race.
I mean, I definitely didn't have that experience, but I do know that my white grandmother who married a black man then believed that she understood racism in a way that she clearly didn't. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, we kind of called it white lady syndrome, where she was extremely open-minded and very liberal and extremely empathetic. She herself was Jewish. She felt she could understand discrimination. But you're right that you can be both, have a lot of unconscious bias and a lot of blind spots while married to someone of a different race. On the other hand, I would imagine that if we had a society in which people very much disapproved of interracial marriage, in which people were not intermarrying, we would probably call that a sign of explicit discrimination, wouldn't we?
Yes, but I think it's interesting that people are okay with that, but they still haven't done the work of becoming anti-racist. You know what I mean? Like that you can still harbor the same feelings and, you know, issues with people of color that generations past had, but you're okay with the idea of people being intermarried.
But I mean, was marriage ever going to solve that? I mean, getting people to not be racist when that's what the Western world, at least, if not others, have invested in economically, socially for literally centuries. I mean, isn't it possible that all of these interracial marriages are at least moving the dial forward, even if it's not getting us all the way there?
I don't think so. You know, I've just come across too many people that have participated in these marriages that had biased feelings toward the group of people that they, you know, have chosen to partner with. And I've known too many biracial black children who've suffered as a result.
So one of your parents is biracial, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I assume black and some other race.
Black and white, yes.
Okay. And does some of these views come from struggles that parent had?
Yes. You know, like my father was raised only by a white mother. She was not, you know, and my dad was born in 1953. So like he lived through obviously a very difficult period of time in American life. And I think his mother did the best she could, but she wasn't necessarily a race woman, you know, or an activist of any sort. So there was just so much that he didn't know and so much work he had to do to connect with his black side. You know what I mean? I don't think she was a terrible parent of a mixed race child. I think she did a good job of, like, you know, helping him understand his identity. And even though my father is as light as you, he's always identified as black. I've heard him use the word mixed once.
Oh, yeah. I mean, your racial identity is yours. Yeah. I firmly believe. And, you know, everyone needs to stay the frick out of it. On the other hand, I mean, I have to go back to this idea that a lack of interracial marriages would, to most people, indicate really kind of extreme racism.
Maybe on the part of white people, but on the part of people of color, that doesn't indicate racism. You know, I refuse to date interracially, and it's not because I'm prejudiced against people of other races. It's because I value and treasure having relationships with black men.
You know, this brings us back to this whole sort of the difference between individual bias and systemic racism, right? Like, it's not a sign of racism if black people don't intermarry because black people can't systemically discriminate.
Right.
Black people can individually discriminate. And it's possible that some black people choose not to date white people because they have bias against Caucasians, right? That's possible.
Well, I think that bias comes Yes, but when we talk about where that bias comes from, it's not the same as anti-Black bias, right? It's a bias that's based on centuries of oppression.
Either way, they're still... When you make assumptions about another person based on their race, it's bias, right? You can make assumptions about somebody based on their weight, based on what clothes they're wearing, based on where they went to school. That's all bias. So I'm just saying...
You don't have to assume anything about white people. You know, I don't think about white people when it comes to dating. You know, like, I love Black men. I'm attracted to Black men. I love myself. I'm attracted to things that remind me of myself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again, because somebody doesn't choose to date outside their race, I don't think that's automatically an indicator of bias. Do you think that if a white person will not date a Black person, that automatically means they're biased?
I don't necessarily think so. You know, most people across the world date within their own, you know, groups. I mean, I don't think that's such a horrible thing, you know? I understand how the idea of a white person not being interested in dating a Black person could signal bias. But I mean, there's something to be said for somebody who comes from what you've come from, who's experienced things that you've experienced, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I get all of that. I just feel like, A, if somebody chooses not to date outside their race, that's one thing. If a society chooses in broad strokes is not dating outside their race, that to me is a sign of real racism. And you're right. It's completely different within the Black community than it is with the white. And we'll go into that more because I know that we have... non-Black listeners who are saying, wait, why? And we're happy to explain that. We'll take a break first. But this is a difficult sort of line that we're trying to establish here. And I want to make sure we're as clear as possible. I'm Celeste Headley. This is Hear Me Out. We're talking about whether or not interracial relationships and mixed race kids are a sign of racial progress within American society. And my guest, Jamila Lemieux, says no. We'll talk more after a break. This spring, I have an idea for you that can help you reduce the amount of stress in your life and eat healthier, eat better quality, and save a lot of time. All you need is Factor. Every fresh, never frozen meal is crafted by a chef, approved by a dietitian, and they're ready to eat in just a couple of minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 different options, and there's a lot of really popular ones like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, and Veggie. Also, every week, there's more than 60 add-ons. Like, you can get breakfast, you can get on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages, so many things to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Seriously, get started today and fuel up to reach your springtime goals. I had the opportunity to try some Factor meals for a week. And let me tell you something, I have used a lot of different delivery services. And I'll be honest with you, generally it is a trade-off. The faster it is to prepare these meals, the less taste they have. That is not the case with Factor. These have never been frozen. The vegetables are still crisp. The spices are still flavorful. They're really good. And they do honestly take only a couple of minutes. You can get chef-prepared meals on your table in just a couple of minutes if you get Factor's ready-to-eat meals. And then you get back to what you love doing this spring. If you're looking for gourmet meals, they have you covered. You can try meals that have premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, asparagus. Factor meals eliminate all the hassle of choosing a menu, shopping, prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. All you have to do is heat them up and then savor a truly delicious meal. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, so you look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/hearmeout50 and use code HEARMEOUT50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. That's code HEARMEOUT at factormeals.com/hearmeout50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
And we're back. This is Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headlee. And today we have Jamila Lemieux on, who says that although Americans are much more likely to approve of interracial marriages now than they were in, say, the 1950s, 60s, even 70s, even though more people by far are married to someone outside their race now than they were in 1967, just 3% of married couples were interracial, now it's 20%. That doesn't mean that America is less racist than it was in 1967. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. So before we took a break, we were talking about why it's different for a Black person not to choose outside to date outside their race as opposed to a white person. I don't think individually it's necessarily different, except that Black people in the United States have been harmed in every possible way by white communities. And so in ways that the vast majority of white people have not been harmed by someone from another race. And so there's a certain amount of mistrust that I think is justified. It doesn't mean I'm approving of discrimination. I'm just saying there's a difference. But the biggest difference is that only the white community can benefit from systemic racism. That's it. Only the white community in the United States has the dominance and power to be able to benefit from systemic racism. So going back to what you were saying before about why you choose not to date outside your own race, like I don't see that as a problem. However, there is a difference now between you being allowed to make that choice, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to not that long ago when it was illegal. You know, my grandparents got married in Tijuana. It was illegal for them to be married. Isn't that a sign of racial progress?
Yes. I mean, the legality of interracial marriage is a sign of racial progress. I'm just saying the increase in the number of interracial marriages doesn't necessarily signal racial progress, because when we go inside a lot of these relationships, one or both partners are dealing with some level of bias, perhaps against their own group. You know, the anti-Blackness of a lot of Black people that partner white is stunning.
Yeah. It's difficult for me to separate those two, though, because along with it took people's change of mind in order to make interracial marriage legal. Like, that required people to change their minds to
white people.
Right. Exactly. It required them to, at least on some level, see Black people as humans, not equal in most cases, but at least humans.
Or at the very least, to want to honor the wishes of a white person who wanted to be with a Black person.
Fair. That's fair. On the other hand, how do you separate that change of mind from what was inevitable, that making it legal would bring all of those relationships that existed before but were illegal now into the open? How do you separate that out?
Because, again, I think when we go inside a lot of interracial relationships, we're dealing with things that are very much the evidence of racism. You know, either the white partner still being biased, still holding anti-Black or anti-Asian or anti-Latino views, or the partner of color having issues with their own group. You know, I mean, there's so many people that fetishize having mixed babies. You know what I mean? Oh, mixed babies are so cute, you know? And it's like, do you understand what it really means to be a mixed person and the experience that they're going to have? And are you prepared to talk to them about both parts of their culture to make sure that they're grounded in everything that they come from? A lot of people are not up for that task.
But I mean, I can't imagine it's better in all white marriages. I mean, if we were going to focus on just the Caucasian part of this equation, it may not be perfect in an interracial marriage. I mean, every single person has unconscious bias of some kind, and Caucasians have absorbed. Look, every American has absorbed a lot of negative messages about Black people.
Mm-hmm.
Black people have too. And so I think you're going to find that in interracial marriages, but is it actually going to be better in an all-white marriage?
Well, I mean, I honestly focus more on the Black half because that's where my concern lies, to be fair. Would that be better in an all-white marriage? No, but you wouldn't have a person of color potentially being mistreated by somebody who's racist. You know what I mean? Out of all the combinations of interracial couplings, Black men and white women have the highest rate of divorce. And so often the dispatch from those relationships is somebody's anti-Blackness was a factor, whether it was the white partner who couldn't hide her distaste for Black people or perhaps had a distaste for Black women while enjoying the company of Black men, because that's a thing. That's very much a thing, you know, and then they end up raising Black daughters who have to deal with their mother's own discomfort with Black women, or the anti-Blackness of the Black male partner, you know, who wanted those light-skinned babies, who wanted children who didn't look like his own mother. You know, who wanted to escape from something that he doesn't like about himself in the arms of someone white.
Yeah, I all of this makes perfect sense. And it's not that so much that I disagree with you as I think it's not. I don't think you're 100% right. Like, I do think that there is an extent to which the rise in interracial couples does signify some progress. I just think that racism is so indelibly imprinted on American society and American culture that no one lever is going to, you know, loosen that window. Like, I think it's asking too much of interracial marriages to think that they can solve. That's just because somebody falls in love with someone of a different race, that suddenly all that unconscious bias that literally they're unconscious of, they're not aware they have, will go away. Like, it's always going to take more than falling in love with somebody.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I just think that the idea that mixed race marriages or an increase in the number of mixed race children is a sign of progress is just a flawed premise for that reason, you know? That's not, I don't think that work should be put on the backs of individual marriages, you know? And I think it's not surprising that so many of these marriages fail because of what they're up against, because they're dealing with people who've been indoctrinated with unconscious biases their entire lives, you know, expected to somehow shed that skin because they fall in love with someone. But for me, I also think that if you are a white person who is dating a person of color, you should really be an exemplary-ass white person. You know, you can't just date any old white guy or white girl. It needs to be somebody who's done some level of work to work past their own anti-Blackness, anti-Asianness, whatever it is. Like, I think that people of color have a responsibility to themselves to hold the white people that they partner with to a certain standard. And a lot of us have not done that.
I will say, though, I mean, as a mixed race person, especially somebody who is very light skinned, and I also, as a caveat here, my family has been marrying light skinned people since the end of the Civil War. And that decision is inherently racist, right? They are, at mm-hmm. least on some level, assuming that the lighter the skinned their kids have, the safer and more successful they'll be. And the shitty part of that is that they're right. It's racist, but they're also right. On the other hand, I will say that because I'm what's known as racially nondescript, it has given me a pretty nuanced view, not better or more insightful, just a different view than other people, right? Like, I think that mixed race people sometimes get a different perspective. And I think it has helped me. I mean, I can't say anything about the white guy who was my dad. But for me as a mixed race kid, I think it really has moved me forward.
I don't know. I mean, I think the experience that you have has a lot to do with what you look like, you know? So if you are a mixed race child who looks ethnically Black, you know, like you're going to have a different experience from somebody who looks like you. And I do understand. I think that on some level, even being the child of a mixed race child, I have a certain level of understanding of the duality of that experience and what it means to be both and. And I respect it, you know, but I just think that, again, if we go inside, if we interrogate so many of these relationships, we're finding some stuff that's really vile and it impacts the children.
Okay, we have to take another break, but when we come back, we're going to dig into that, what you just said. I'm here with Jamila Lemieux, and this is Hear Me Out, a podcast from Slate. I'm Celeste Headlee. We will be right back.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
We're back with a really, I think, important discussion. Jamila Lemieux believes that the rise in interracial couples is not a sign of overall racial progress in the United States. And while I agree with that, Jamila, I also think just before the break, you said that oftentimes when we sort of peel back the cover of these interracial marriages, we find something really vile. I think that's kind of unfair. I mean, I think that that would be true of some marriages. I think it's also true of some marriages that are not interracial. But I think there are interracial marriages where both parties got married because they loved one another and they're doing their absolute best. And in many cases, doing better than people who are not part of an interracial marriage. That in order to stay married, which is difficult regardless of who you are, they are learning and growing as people.
I don't disagree. I know people that are in healthy interracial marriages. You know, like, this is not a broad sweeping condemnation of interracial marriage. You know, I wish there was more study into the realities of interracial marriages. You know, I wish there were more, I wish we knew more about what these individual relationships look like, because there have just been so many dispatches from the children of mixed race marriages that are like, this was really awful for me. You know, like, I had to deal with the anti-Blackness of one or both of my parents, and it had an impact on me. I had to deal with a parent who wasn't willing to learn anything, you know, in order to parent me the way I needed to be parented. You know, just the number of people who are raising mixed race children who want them to be colorblind, you know, or tell them to identify primarily as mixed without any real inquiry or, you know, search into the black side of who they are. Because the white side, you're going to get naturally. You're watching Nickelodeon, you're watching Disney, like you're exposed to white people and white stories, but they're not doing anything to make sure that they're also affirmed in the black parts of them too. And I think that's really cruel. You know, I'm a contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and there was a letter that struck me that I got a few years ago from the white mom of a mixed race child whose daughter was complaining about her complexion and that she wished she looked like her mom, you know, and the mother was just kind of lost to how to talk to her about it and, you know, what to say and what to do. And the father was telling her that it was no big deal, that she would just grow out of it, you know? And so, like, on one hand, I appreciate this woman reaching out for help. And I wrote a very comprehensive letter about all the things she needed to do, that both of them needed to do to affirm her blackness and to make sure that she knew that, like, just because her father hadn't chosen a black woman doesn't mean that he thought less of black women, you know, that he had, that she needed to know that. She needed to know that black girls are good and special, and also that mixed race black girls are not better or more special than dark skinned black girls. You know what I mean? But like, you have to seek that knowledge. You know what I mean? Like, most people just don't have that kind of stuff in them inherently unless they've been doing anti-racist work and have been, you know, surrounded by anti-racism for some time. And some of them have. You know, I have a white young girl who's an educator who specializes in teaching black kids, and she dates black men, and she knows her shit down, you know what I mean? She also has black woman friends. You know what I mean? Like, which I think is incredibly important. Like, people who date interracially don't have friends of the race that they're dating.
Yeah, that can be a warning flag. I mean, you're right that I don't think there is enough study of interracial marriages. On the other hand, we have a lot of research into transracial adoptions. And counter to expectations, researchers have found no significant differences in things like self-esteem, self-worth, success as they get older in life in transracial adoptions. In fact, a number of studies documented that same race white adoptees were significantly more likely to have disorders, mental health referrals, expulsions from school, etc., compared to transracial adoptees. So we do have the evidence showing that when a person of a different race adopts a child, it doesn't impact the child negatively. Certainly, again, and we're talking in broad strokes, we're not talking individually, but there's no evidence for that.
I think that the people who go out of their way to adopt a child outside of their race may have taken steps to understand what they were getting into in ways that people who are guided there by love, who find their way, you know, or lust. You know, like, I look at the Kardashians and I don't see a group of women that I think are, you know, prepared to raise black children, but they're collecting them like little exotic pets.
So, I mean, I don't want to go back over the same ground we've been over. I don't disagree with you. I mean, I guess that's where I am. It's not that I disagree with you. I just feel like there's in-between space. I don't believe that a rise in interracial marriages automatically results in less systemic racism in America. I do believe that interracial marriages absolutely can change people's minds and hearts. And I've seen it happen. And I don't think regular marriages have less likelihood of being toxic, not even just between the two people, but even for the kids. I mean, there are kids who are children of not interracial marriages that have been scarred for life by what goes on. I mean, you know, I'm not sure that that is related to whether it's interracial or not.
It depends on who the people in the relationship are, but a lot of kids are carrying scars that are on the basis of having mixed race parents, you know, of having parents that were not prepared to raise a child of color. having parents that have not dealt with their own internalized anti-blackness, again, including the black parent. You know, that's, I have a lot of smoke. This is not necessarily a broad sweeping condemnation of white people in interracial marriages. You know, my deep concern is with black people that are participating with them. And there are a lot of them, you know, there are a lot of black men who talk very openly about their distaste for black women. You know, and that they don't like us. They don't, you know, they think we're loud and mouthy, and they go and they have black daughters with white women. You know, like somebody who has those sort of attitudes can't be expected not to pass that poison on to their children in some way.
I mean, that hasn't changed. We have heard, we have all these letters and documents dating back nearly 200 years saying with black women saying that black men don't respect them and don't support them. Like that, I totally understand. On the other hand, it sounds like the evidence that you're giving is entirely anecdotal.
It is. This is a hot take. I'm not a scholar. The producer asked me if I had a hot take.
This is definitely a hot take. You know, I mean, I will be really interested to hear what kind of letters that we get, because I feel like we're probably going to hear from a lot of mixed race people and people who are in interracial marriages. And I'm willing to bet that they will be split between those who have had the kind of experience you're talking about and those who have had a great experience, which I guess is kind of the point. Is there anything else that you wanted to say before we turn it over to the audience to decide?
I just want to say I find it very disturbing that Kris Jenner has more black grandchildren than Diana Ross.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
Like something happens, you know, like people talked about, you know, there was a time where people would say mixed babies are a sign of progress, but like, we don't talk about what happens when those mixed babies partner with white people, you know, and then they partner with white people. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got somebody who's got to pull out a picture of their grandfather to explain why they can use the N-word.
I think if you have to pull out the photo of your grandfather, you shouldn't be using the N-word. That is my hot take. I don't think, regardless of your background, someone who has my complexion should be using the N-word, period. But in any case, we are now going to hear a lot from our listeners. And I really appreciate your bringing this to us, because I think it's a super important discussion and I don't think it's talked about enough.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, every week I say that I know you're going to have opinions about the conversation, and I mean it every week, but this week, I know you have thoughts. I can almost feel your thoughts hitting me in the forehead, and I want to know what they are. I want you to articulate them to us. Email us what you're thinking about this whole subject, especially if you have been part of an interracial marriage, if you're a mixed person, or even if you're not. It's hearmeout@slate.com. Whether you agree with your guest, whether you don't, we just want to hear what you think. So last week, we had writer and real estate developer John McMillan on, talking about capitalism as a solution to the housing crisis. It was a thought-provoking conversation for us, and for you too. So before we go, we want to share a letter one of you sent about that discussion. Eric wrote this: "Interesting discussion about affordable housing. I'm a planner with almost 40 years of experience working as a planner, mostly in the public sector, where I regularly work with residential developers on a wide variety of housing types. One, an early and important lesson I learned is that nobody, in the private sector anyway, will build something if they can't make money doing so. Two, California is an excellent example of the failure of legislation to solve housing problems. For more than 40 years, every city in California has been required to include in their general plan a detailed chapter demonstrating how the local agency will help provide affordable housing at levels mandated by the state of California. It hasn't worked. There is no simple solution, as your guest points out. There are many approaches, but no silver bullet." Thanks, Eric. You know, that is the type of really thoughtful and reasoned response that is relatively unique to the show, and I'm grateful for it. Thank you very much for sending in your thoughts, and we want to hear from all of you. Our email address is hearmeout@slate.com. We know you have opinions, so keep them coming. Hear Me Out is a podcast from The Slate. The show is produced by Maura Curry. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations. Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. I am your mixed race host, Celeste Headley. Until next time, speak your mind, but keep it open.